to sing my great Redeemer's praise, my great Redeemer's praise.
Hello, dear friend. This is Whitney Doe inviting you to listen to Methodist Hour. We will hear the music of contemporary praise and a timely message from the Bible by John Wolfe. Stay with us and enjoy the next 14 minutes, won't you?
Gracious Master and my God.
Methodist Hour encourages evangelical Christianity as we reach around the world.
The honors of thy name.
Prayer and praise are combined in this contemporary song. Sing along with us. Lead me, Lord, I will follow. Today's message has an unusual title, You Can't Put It Into a Trunk. Here is Methodist Hour President, the Reverend John Wolfe.
Thank you so much, Whit. The gospel lesson is Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a certain village where there was a woman named Martha who welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. So she came to Jesus and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me. But Jesus answered, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need only for one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her. Amen. She said the dish was worth $2,000. And I thought, how in the world could this little dish, this little soup bowl, be worth $2,000? Well, Judy's Aunt Maretta is a serious art and antique dealer, and I was holding on to one of her prized possessions. But I had no idea of its value because I didn't notice the details of the piece and didn't even know how to look for them. There are scriptures like the one today that have details that are so easy to overlook that we forget to notice them, and sometimes they provide such rich understanding for the meaning of the lesson itself. At first reading, this lesson is about two sisters named Mary and Martha. Mary is listening to Jesus' words, and Martha is busy with chores around the house. Jesus gently reminds Martha that listening to his words are the most important thing she could be doing. Now let's take a second look at that. See, Luke begins this lesson by telling us that Jesus and the disciples are, quote, on the way. Remember that whenever you see these words, on the way, they're teaching us that Jesus is on the way to Jerusalem, on the way to the cross, and on the way to die. You might begin by saying, when Jesus was headed toward Jerusalem to the cross, he decided to stop to see some good friends. He went by the home of Mary and Martha. Now, Luke does not tell us exactly where they lived, only that it was on the way to the cross. If you begin to think about Jesus right now, his heart is already heavy as he begins to think about that cross. The cross would mean humility, humiliation. It would mean leaving friends and family. Things were no longer the same, and Jesus now knew that he would have to face the cross and all that it meant. And I think Jesus knew these two women. Their friendship would be a comfort to him and to the disciples. Stopping there would mean a good night's rest with good friends. Scholars remind us that for Jesus to stop to visit and teach in the home of two women was very irregular. No self-respecting rabbi would even consider being seen in the home of two women. Mary and Martha were obviously excited to see Jesus in their home. The visit was apparently not expected, and Martha had so much preparation to take care of. Luke really doesn't say what all she was doing. He only refers to her many tasks. Now, Martha was not doing anything wrong. In fact, what she was doing was quite normal. What she was doing was out of respect for her honored guest. Martha wanted to express her care for Jesus by making everything in her home ready for him. But Jesus just wanted to talk with her. He wanted to share his life with this good friend. There is an important principle here. You remember Stephen Covey's in his excellent book on leadership. He says, I've never met a man who on his deathbed said, I wish I'd spent more time at the office. When I read those lines, friends, I began to pause and think for a long time about my dad. I remembered those numerous times when he would come home on Friday night. Friday was payday. Often Dad would stop at the grocery on the way home and bring some little bags of candy to me and my older brother. The little brown bags were full of different kinds of candy. I realize now that he had to personally pick out the assortment from the big glass jar there at Earl's grocery store. I know that he was thinking of us as he did that. He thought of us individually. The bags were always different, but equal. Dad worked a lot at night. He usually came home for dinner and had to go back to work. When my brother and I were old enough, Dad would occasionally take us to work with him. One of my most vivid memories is the night he took us on a wrecker call. Dad was the manager of a Pontiac dealership. Emergency calls came to our home often after hours. This night, it had been snowing for a long time, and one of his customers had jammed her car into the side of a snowbank. Dad had to crawl under the car to hook up the chains to pull the car out of the snow. It was cold. We were cold. It took a long time, and I don't remember the customer ever coming that night. But you know, I do remember thinking that this customer must be very important because my dad worked very hard for her that night in the snow. As a little boy, I never thought about my dad being tired and cold and wanting to be in the home on those nights. But Dad never said much about anything like that to my two brothers and to me. The sad thing is for me that I never understood how much I needed for my dad to take time to talk with me and talk with my brothers. When Dad was around, he was always fixing things or painting things. He could fix anything. Sometime late in my adolescence, Dad's alcohol addiction began to play a major role in our family. By the time I was a teenager, I was so busy with school and football and youth group that I just didn't have time to talk to Dad. Now, I was doing some important things that most teenagers do. It wasn't that I didn't love my family, but I just didn't have the time. At Dad's funeral, I kept thinking, I wish we had time to talk. I wish we had time just to know each other, to share dreams and hopes, time for Dad to teach me things that I would need to know for living my life. It made me think of Jim. Jim's dad was a college professor. When Jim was about 7, his dad was working on his dissertation for his PhD. He was working on a research project in archaeology. During the summer, Dr. Winston had to go to Israel to work in the digs to gather information for his research and publications. Jim had two brothers. Dr. Winston received numerous awards for his work in his field. His travel took him all over the world. Because of his work, he spent a lot of time off working in his lab. Jim was so proud of his dad, some of his friends actually grew kind of tired of hearing about how Jimmy bragged on his dad all the time. Dad, he said one night, I want to be an archaeologist. What do you think, Dad? Well, son, I don't think you have what it takes. It's a lot of hard work, and you don't like to work that hard. Now, Jimmy was a B-plus student and was awarded several scholarships when he graduated from high school. When he graduated from his college, he had a 3.4 average on a 4.0 system. He had been a successful student. Jim applied for graduate school to get a Ph.D. in archaeology. He failed the exam. In fact, he failed twice. For 30 years, Jim had failed at numerous jobs. In fact, every time he became successful at his job, suddenly everything went wrong. His marriage was destroyed. His two sons are angry at him for messing up their lives. Dad's never around, they told me. He never talks to us. We don't have a clue about what's going on with him. They were just so frustrated. You know, I hope you can follow this story. When I last saw Jim, we were sitting under a tree in front of Peachford Mental Health Hospital in Atlanta. He was being treated for his chemical addiction. John, he said, "You know, my dad was right. I'm really not smart enough to amount to anything." Dad and I never really talked much, but I'll never forget that night in the lab when he told me. And just before he said the words, there was such a sadness in his face, it just overwhelmed me. He said, "My dad said, Jimmy, you just don't have what it takes." You know, somewhere in Jim's garage, there are several large trunks full of his dad's plaques and books and awards. One box has 25 books that he had written. Now, there in the hospital, there was a little boy for whom all the books and all the awards in the world could not fill the emptiness inside his heart. There are so many important things to do with our lives. But just maybe one thing is more important than anything else. You know, it doesn't happen often. But maybe the most important thing is sharing your life with another human being. Because, you know, after all, it can't be taken away or even put into a trunk. Amen.
John Wolfe, I know you've got another message. Share your word with us now.
Thank you so much. Now, somewhere on my journey through seminary and serving as a pastor, I discovered that I really needed to look closer to the Scriptures, not so much for all of the ramifications of the verses, but I had to really ask, what does this mean for me right now? You know, I've been in Bible studies where they were so complicated that I couldn't really figure out what was being taught. I mean, the teacher seemed to be so into all the cross-references that I frankly was lost. But I still didn't know what Jesus meant for me right now. Now I simply look at the text and I find the rich meaning for right now. He was not teaching scholars, you know. He was teaching folks like you and me. And he was not teaching memory verses. Oh, I love them. But he was really teaching how we could live effective lives together. Wouldn't you agree with me that across the world, our most effective need today is to learn how to live together? It's so obvious. But to think that a young man from a very modest family could teach us the fundamental principle of how to live together across the world. You know, Jesus simply said, treat each other like you want to be treated. Love your neighbor like you love yourself. Everywhere you go, at home, across the street, job, school, on the other side of the world. And to imagine that God had to send his son just to teach this simple, profound principle. When I was asked some time ago to be part of a team doing world reconciliation conferences, I couldn't understand how in the world to begin such a task. A young lawyer was on our team, and he looked at me and he said, John, you look like a cow looking at a new gate. But he was right. I was lost. Finally, he said, John, it begins with you and me. And you know what? That really made sense. Our website is MethodistHourInternational.com. MethodistHourInternational.com. Blessing on you, and I hope your day is fabulous. Amen.
And now until next week, this is your producer and host, Whitney Doe, praying that the good news will always be yours. And may the Lord bless you and keep you.